Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 23rd of December, recording at 7:49 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various different asset classes. But first, a very quick review of the week. Stock markets, all the important actions been on the upside. So, reconfirmation of the brisk rally that we have seen since the October lows, reconfirmation of those upward trends that we've really seen since March 2003, approximately, for the various different indices. And we are set to roll into the new year with these gains and being extended, more likely than not. Now, other highlights in here, bonds, firm tone across the board. I think we're going to be a little bit more of a technical rally here. And other, what one factor that would be related to that would be that oil prices, having peaked in August, have steadied somewhat down here above the $55 level, but they certainly haven't been going anywhere on the upside for very long. So that can only mean that some of those inflationary pressures caused by oil previously come out of the system. Now, elsewhere, dollar, we've seen a rally in here this week, quite a sharp rally, and that means that this overall dollar run, which I've described as looking long in the tooth, looking tired, but it certainly had a sort of a Viagra reaction here this week, so it ain't dead yet. And precious metals bottoming out, I think, as the evidence that, as conclusion on the evidence that we're seeing here so far, as I've been saying, that this week we've seen the beginning of a bottoming out process for this very, very bullish sector in terms of its long-term secular trend. And that's about it, except natural gas. That's been the big move on the downside, falling back very, very sharply on the warmer weather in the U.S. Okay, what about this overall equity scene now? Big term, big picture. And my view first is, as I've just said, that the rally, best case scenario, is still very much alive and well, and that is that we run into the first quarter of the year and extend the gains that we've been seeing. Now, there's no doubt that we do see some loss of momentum by a number of indices, or the trends have become a little bit more choppy, which is a loss of consistency. And that is to be expected at this stage of a cycle, but that doesn't mean that one bails out here yet. And this is going to end one of two ways. We might get an enthusiastic spurt on the upside, an acceleration, in other words, in which case markets will peak and probably come down quite quickly when we do get the next important correction, which I think will certainly be I think there will certainly be a very important correction in 2006. More on that in a moment. Or we get the gradual rollover, more of a type 3 top, if you've been to the chart seminar with Churning Time and Size. That one, well, probably the acceleration would be the easiest one to deal with for those of you who understand charts and the implications. But it's for the markets to determine how these trends will eventually end and when they end. Now, I do feel, as you know, and we're not going to repeat all the reasons for this, but I do feel that, except to just say that cyclical factors, rising interest rates really does suggest, but particularly the cyclical factors in the U.S. election cycle, that we are quite likely to see a significant correction in 2006. That's hardly the end of the world, but I think we will probably end this great bull run that began in March 2003, which again is becoming long in the tooth, and it'll be 3 years old at the end of February, and that's about as good as technical bulls within secular bears. I'm talking about Wall Street now, in terms of the secular bear, which I've long defined as a generational long process of valuation contraction. And of course, I've also said recently that we have seen one heck of a lot of valuation contraction, so we do not have a case where Wall Street is so heavily overvalued as other markets, as it was, say, a year or two ago, or at the beginning of, the beginning of this year. Now, where are the secular bulls, though? And my favorite areas remain very much the supply inelasticity meets rising demand trades. Those are industrial commodities, all industrial commodities. They can get lengthy consolidations, as we saw with gold during the largely the 2004 and much of 2005 before the dramatic breakout on the upside 2 or 3 months ago. We can get Can we see a big medium-term correction underway with crude oil? We have probably commenced one in natural gas as well, and we've seen a very lengthy consolidation. We're coming up the better part of 2 years now for nickel, for instance. But I'm mentioning the longer pauses, and I need to do that because secular bull markets do have these pauses for, say, up to three years or so, just as we get to the secular bull runs within the secular. I guess, sorry, beg your pardon. We get the technical bull runs within the secular bears, which we've been seeing with Wall Street. But in terms of the secular bulls, the supply and elasticity meets rising demand. That's one huge theme likely to run and run. We just have to pick our opportunities technically as they arise. In other words, we cut back when these trends become too overextended on the upside or lose upward momentum, I should say. Cut back when they lose upward momentum, and we use trailing stops as our defense against that inevitable and eventual and inevitable reaction that will be quite significant when it occurs. As we've just seen with gold and silver and other precious metals, for instance. And we, I forgot the other point I was going to make on that, but this is, well, we then also, the other side of that is that we look for the laggards that are beginning to improve, and nickel is one that springs to mind really very strongly here right now. And that other big theme of mine, these are the two primary investment themes for not only this decade, say my decade that I'm using, my investment timing decade, and this starting in 2003, because pretty much everything was in a bear market from that 2000 period on till March 2003. We have the emerging markets. Now, I'll say more about that in a moment, but my favorite area there is Asia. That hasn't done the best. The ones that have done the best have been are the petrocurrencies, but those are genuine bubbles. They'll probably inflate more, but I don't want to play that game. There've been some phenomenal moves in the markets that I really do like, not least India, my very favorite market for the very long term. Now, also, some of these emerging markets do tie in with the supply inelasticity theme. In other words, they are suppliers of a number of these resources. And that brings me to a really, really crucial point that Donald Cox had made in that fabulous Basic Points report that I've talked around, but he really did zero in on it when he said, as a general overall approach, and I do think this is really important now, as a general overall approach, we do not want to be buying companies that are involved in businesses that compete with China and India. We do not want to buy companies that produce products or services that compete with China and India. Now, if all markets are going up, companies in that sector will participate and they'll get some rotational moves, but they won't get the big moves, the really big moves. What we want to buy are companies that produce things that China and India need to import. So that will run from basic raw materials, all basic raw materials, to the wonderful machines that Germany, South Korea, and particularly Japan produce. So that means that another highly important theme here for me is among the developed country, largely industrialized markets. In other words, they don't have agricultural resources exports. Japan at the top of the list. Well, South Korea, they're running at an equal first or close second. I got more reservations about Germany just because I don't like the economic system overall within Euroland. Nothing wrong with the German companies and machines, though. Now, what else to mention? In terms of the supply and elasticity emerging markets, though, there are some big risks. I don't like the political drift in Central and South America, what's principally in South America. Now, politics, you may disagree on that, may feel the risk's worth taking. Brazil's the one that stands out as the most interesting of all those markets, and it's done exceptionally well. But I'll end on that where I began. I don't like the political drift that we're seeing there towards very left-wing governments, and I think also some authoritarian left-wing governments. And we get into the supply and elasticity. I beg your pardon. We get into the kleptocracies as well. Have the same problem with Russia. I don't like the governance there, although you have the mouth-watering valuations on the shares, but the kleptocracy is alive, well, and rapidly growing within Russia. Didn't end with the removal of some of the oligarchs' possessions and powers. It's right there in central government. That's why a fabulous company like Gazprom is sort of a milch cow for the apparatchiks. So the earnings don't feed through to the to the shareholders the way they should. So those are problems. And that does take me back to Asia. But it's not China, because there you have the governance problem as well. And again, India just head and shoulders above the rest. And I'm not talking about a top formation there. Okay. Something else to mention on this, though, in terms of the supply inelasticity shares, here we really do have to be a bit careful. Now, if the sector's performing, some of these lesser mines, lesser oil companies, well, they're going to get spectacular gains. It's a highly speculative field. But as colleague Mark Glowry said rather wisely, the other day, no, it was colleague Owen Tracy here from the home team here at Fuller Money who said it, that I believe that these sort of a little mining companies are like little tech companies. It was definitely Owen. Most of them are going to go to the wall. And just remember that. Most of them will go to the wall. And that's always been the case. I know it to my chagrin. I've owned a few of them, and they do go to the wall. So I'm not interested, really. Very occasionally, you put a small amount of money into a few of these things. Some people love it, and occasionally you hit it big. But this is not core investment stuff. Needless to they these are not core investment items. Needless to say, so. First and foremost, I like the well-managed funds. And that's from things like the Investec Global Energy Funds, or the Guinness Atkinson Fund. And but having said that, I wouldn't be surprised if that's isn't relatively dull for the next oh year, 18 months, or whatever, in line with this medium-term consolidation. But I'm certainly not selling it. It's very much in a secular bull market, and I certainly like the mining share funds. Now, I'm less inclined to cherry pick even among major companies, because what we are certainly going to see as metal prices move up, as oil prices move up in this long secular bull market trend, we're going to see governments say, well, wait a minute, why are we allowing these individual companies to do so well? And they'll start expropriating, or they'll throw in windfall taxes. That's the least of the problems. And then even in the developed countries, there are the swingeing environmental costs. Well, if I had one of those companies operating anywhere near my backyard, I'd want the big environmental constraints as well. But in terms of negotiating this minefield, literally and figuratively, it's a hazardous business. I don't have the time or the skills to do that, and therefore I want to hand over my investment in those markets to experts. There are some exceptions, and for instance, if and when we get the next big stock market shakeout, I wouldn't mind having some Suncor, the Canadian tar sands producer. What I'm very happy to hold are my core mining positions, and that's Rio Tinto, top of the list. Well, BHP Billiton. The only reason BHP Billiton isn't a co-favorite is because it takes at least 3 years to successfully or fully absorb a major takeover like we saw with Billiton and taking over Western Mining. Now, the same thing applies to Inco taking over International. Taking over Falcon Bridge. So that share has underperformed. It may underperform a little bit long for a little bit longer, but I think that the nickel price has turned the corner, and or Inco rather will be either respectably dull next year, but it could easily be a 50%er or more. And if we take it 2 years out, I 2 or 3 years out, I would say we're talking about a 50 to 100% or more. So I like these big companies that have these very, very strong positions in these. Again, this theme, and producing things that China and India and of course other developing countries need to buy, and there's still plenty of Western demand for these products. As well, they do run some of the environmental risks and some of the expropriation risks as well. But if you get major companies that have very dominant resources positions, and they're in generally friendly countries in terms of the development of those resources, then that is really a very, very bullish combination overall. So I like those enormously. Now, okay, I've got to move on here. In terms of government bonds, secular bear market, there's too much of the stuff around. Look at all those 50-year bonds that governments are now wanting to issue. It's pretty obvious that they wouldn't be issuing 50-year debt in these treasuries if they did not feel very confident that yields were going to rise over the long term. Therefore, I'm only interested in bonds, long-term government bonds, as a short sale opportunity, and that's after they rally, and the main factor that would cause them to rally is a flight to so-called quality after we get a big stock market shakeout. But I don't regard these government bonds as quality in this cycle. They were during the disinflationary, deflationary years, but not in this cycle going forward with all this money printing that's going on and all these big government deficits and so on. Then on to the currencies. Very quickly, there are no hard currencies fiat currencies, that is, paper money currencies. There are less soggy ones, or you could even, if that's being a bit too harsh, you could say mildly firm ones, and those are the ones, those are the commodity producing countries. So things like the Canadian dollar, the Australian dollar. But really, the bottom line, and we must never lose sight of this, no country wants a strong currency. If that currency is strong, well, they'll cut interest rates, that's for sure. But that can it can take quite a while for that to work if the trend in the currency is upwards. So they print the stuff, and we're seeing plenty of that. We have been seeing plenty of that, and I think they'll go right on doing it. So everybody wants to keep their currency down so as to not lose any competitive edge unnecessarily in this very, very competitive global economic environment. And the other key point that I want to make. Well, get me on this. Good to let me go on to the resources in here. I've mentioned the secular bull market theme, the industrial resources I'm talking about. I am continuing, well, over time, I've been becoming less and less interested in a number of the agricultural commodities. There are some spectacular plays. I would take those entirely on a basis of charts. Sugar has been wonderful. I haven't been there, partly because I've been concentrating on the industrial resources and the opportunities in the soft commodities are too far and few between and too risky. And this is largely due to the agronomists and biochemists who have been producing hardier and higher yielding strains really for a very long time, and there doesn't seem to be any end in sight to that or any reason why that should end. Whereas contrast that with industrial resources, which are in finite supply, increasingly difficult to locate, and where you know, even if you have a new rich ore body or oil field, and there aren't many of those around that people are still finding. But even if you do have that, it can take many years to get the equipment and the personnel and so on, and get all the financing together to get this stuff out of the ground and refined. Well, with soybeans or corn or wheat, of course, you just plant a little bit more in the next crop cycle, and virtually every country does produce these. So I'm less interested in those. The industrial resources are the really attractive field. Now, one last couple of last thoughts here. The chart library in terms of good investment trust, closed-end funds, and unit trusts or mutual funds. If there are any that you feel pipe into any of these interesting themes, particularly among emerging markets, but say developed country markets, when we're talking about fuller money favorites such as Japan, such as such as South Korea, so on. But if you know of any of these that are well managed, and I always like the personal recommendation or personal endorsement. Somebody says, you know, I've looked at this, I've studied this, I own it, or I'm thinking of owning this, and it has performed respectably. That's always of interest to own him myself, and because we know it would, well, it'd be directly of interest to own him myself. And we also know that it would be of interest to many, many, many subscribers out there. We can't keep our tabs on all of these things, but if you tell us, if you highlight some of them for us, and of course we're looking ourselves and add some of these. But point is, just let us know. Send in an email. Give us the name and the code if you can of that fund or investment trust or special ETF. And we'll get it in the chart library. so that we can all benefit from being able to monitor these. There's no limit to the number of vehicles of that type that we can put in there, and we're classifying them by geographical areas, as you know, or by sector. And then, last point to make, I just want to wish all of you who celebrate Christmas the very merry and happiest of Christmas, and for those of you who do not have Christmas as part of your culture, you've got some holiday time here, which I hope is very special for you and your families as well. All the best, and I'll be back on Wednesday.